Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. Today we're going to be covering Angela and Enchantress in a long overdue box review. Before we dive into that though, I want to shout out the patrons who pay for this, who keep us going. You can check that out at patreon.com/AcrossTheBifrost. And I also want to mention the Across the Bifrost Nexus, which is just a collection of different content creators who have all come together on a single site to make it a little bit easier for you, the listener, to find. You can find that at AcrossTheBifrost.com. So, without any further ado, here is the Angela and Enchantress episode with, of course, TT and Pat Dunford.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a...
Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. I'll be joined in a moment by my co-host, Pat Dunford. But today, we are going to be talking about the new, in parentheses, Asgard box of Angela and Enchantress, the worst-kept secret in the MCP universe. But before we do that, Pat, how are you holding up?
I'm holding up real good, thank you, TT. It is just after Christmas. I hope you had a good Christmas.
Yeah, with children, it's kind of crazy. I struggle to imagine what Christmas is like without children. Did you have your niece and nephew around, or was it a kidless holiday for you as well?
Yeah, I did. And actually, we had, going to bore you now with excessive detail because you asked the question, but we had a little lockdown in London over Christmas. So our original Christmas plans got cancelled and we ended up staying in London. So the downside of that is I didn't get to see my family. But the plus side is I did get to see my fiancé's niece and nephew. So we had a happy Christmas with kids running around as well.
Yeah, these quiet Christmases everyone talks about are so mind-boggling and foreign to me. I can't even remember what those days were like. But yeah, I did have a good holiday. And I do want to take a minute and wish everyone a happy new year. Patrons, you'll be hearing this in 2020. Non-patrons, you'll be hearing this in 2021. But Pat and I actually put out 54 episodes this year. We never missed a week. We had a couple weeks where we did bonus episodes, like Thanos or the Band of Restricted announcement. And we just honestly want to thank you all for listening. Thank you all for hanging with us. And maybe we'll crack, we're on pace to crack 100 episodes in 2021.
That is an awesome resolution to have. I look forward to making it.
All right. So we have Angela and Enchantress. And I guess it deserves a little bit of backstory here. They were sold early in some areas of the world. And their street date is technically, I think, next week for the rest of the world. So I think most of the quote-unquote hardcore players own the box. Pat, I think you have the box.
Yeah, so I live in the UK and it was sold by retailers in the UK in like October. So I've had these models painted and I've been playing with them now for 3 months almost.
Yeah, and I, in America, which is a weird switch, do not have them. I didn't want to pay for the shipping, so I've just been waiting for them. So it's been a little bit weird. They haven't been legal in the online leagues because Atomic Mass Games still is honoring their official street date. But we're going to go ahead and talk about them today. Two pretty powerful characters again, Angela and Enchantress. Which one do you want to start with, Pat?
Let's just start with Angela for alphabetical order. And I guess with power level as well, because Angela is a badass. Looking at her card, she is rocking 6 stamina on her front side, 7 on the back, so 13 stamina total, and that is the only thing that changes between her healthy and injured sides. She's a long mover with a very important twist you won't see on her card, which is she also has a 50mm base. And as we'll get into, that extra couple of millimeters makes a huge difference on the tabletop. She is size 2, and she is 5 threat. Her defenses are a very respectable 4-4-4 across the board. And she has 3 attacks. Her first attack, her basic strike, is called Xiphos, the Sword of Stars, which is a badass name. It is a range 2, 6 dice physical attack. It gives power equal to damage. And after the attack is resolved, Angela is placed within range 2 of the target that she was attacking. Her second attack, Blades of Ica, is a range 4 energy attack. Does 5 dice, it costs 1 power, and it has a trigger on a hit, so if you roll the little explosion on the dice, which is 2 of out of every 8 pips, you get Pursuit, which is before damage is dealt, Angela can advance short towards her target. Important point here, with her base size, even at max range, this will let her advance into range to then do a Xiphos Sword of Stars attack, which is nice. And last but not least, she's got Heaven's Wrath. This is her spender. Range 3, 4 dice physical attack, costing 3 power. But she gets to add dice equal to the target's size. So it will range somewhere between 5 and 8 dice. If you're targeting someone like MODOK, you can go up to 8. And it has a very weird trigger, the cleave, which is on double quit wild. After this attack is resolved, this character may make an additional Heaven's Wrath attack without paying the power cost. The additional attack must target the original target character. This attack does not have the cleave special rule. So, in theory, you can make 2 8 dice attacks against someone. In reality, you're probably rolling less dice, and it seems real hard to get the cleave.
There's a lot of attacks. There's a lot to unpack. Let's start with Xyphos, the Sword of the Stars. It's an amazing builder, right? Not the best builder in the game, but definitely up there. 6 dice is great, and the place effect being a guaranteed, right? You don't need a trigger for it or anything. It just gives her an extreme amount of movement.
Yeah, definitely. And an interesting thing about this place effect is it's within range 2 of the target, and I don't think we've got any other characters that do this, right? Most times, if you place after attacking someone, you place within range 1. And range 2 is a lot longer than range 1, right? It's 3 inches instead of 1 inch. So it's a lot of flexibility of where Angela can position with this attack. Going from her maximum attack range onto the character and flipping to the exact opposite side of them makes her move a really long way. Like against another 50mm base, that's an 8 inch movement.
Yeah, did we talk about her top bar, Pat?
Yeah. I mentioned that she's a long mover with a 50mm base. So do you want to go deeper into that?
No, that's fine. I think just highlighting that she's the long mover, sorry I missed that, combined with this like bounce effect on her initial attack, the pursuit move, she's just extremely mobile, right? And she only gets more mobile with her superpowers.
Yeah, she's incredibly mobile. Like, her worst case scenario, if she's got someone very long way away, is she might do a single long move and then a Blades of Ichor attack followed by a pursuit. And that is not a lot of damage, but it's a good kind of fail case for her. And if she can get off multiple Xyphos attacks, she can do a good amount of damage and also get some extra mobility thrown in there.
Yeah, so before we get to her superpowers, though, I did want to talk about her attacks a little more. It's worth noting that she isn't Asgardian. So that Blades of Ichor costing 1 doesn't have the same penalty as kind of some other characters would, right? You could just take a long move, a Blades of Ichor to get someplace and still have enough to interact. And then Heaven's Wrath, what do you think about that spender? It's definitely a weird one, right? I think on average, you're looking at 6 dice, right? With 8 being the high, as you said, with MODOK.
Yeah, I don't think I'm often going to want to spend 3 power to do a 6 dice attack at range 3 when my power builder is a 6 dice attack at range 2, right? And I have a 1 cost range 4 attack. It's a bit it would be a bit corner case. If I just absolutely wanted to maximize my damage no matter the cost, and I wasn't within range 2, but I was within range 3, then maybe then I'm targeting a size 2 character. But I think, really, you're saving this for bigger targets, and obviously the more dice you roll, the better your chance of getting the cleave off. As we mentioned, I've got no idea what the odds are of getting the cleave, but I have to imagine it's pretty low.
Yeah, it's not great, right? Because those are unique faces. I will say that, like, if you have anyway, yeah, it's not great odds. And I think you kind of hit it on the head. When I've been playing with her, the only times I really use it are if I need to hit a home run, if I absolutely have to daze this character, I might roll Heaven's Wrath twice just to maximize my cleave chances. And there are some situations where that range 3 is nice, so.
Yeah, definitely. It's not bad by any means, but I think this is a character who is not going to be using their spender often, right? Or at least not that one. Blades of Ichor, she might use a bit more, but this is one of those corner case spenders that you won't have a plan to use turn in, turn out. You just might come up very occasionally.
Yeah, and it's not so much that it's a bad spender, it's just that her other attacks are so good and compelling. You put this on other characters, and I could see them using it a lot, but she has a whole host of superpowers. Pat, where do you want to start there?
Yeah, so just going down the list, her first is Odin's Daughter's Might, a reference to her being Odin's daughter, of course. It costs 2 power, and it's a throw. This is a throw that is range 2, throws medium, and throws terrain of size 4 or less. It's a really powerful damage dealing ability. I want to emphasize, because I see people refer to this often and misread it, it cannot throw characters. People often say, Angela just has Thor's throw, but cheaper. Well, no, because Thor can throw a size 4 character, and Angela can't. So it is a worse throw, but it's a budget option. And it's a recurring theme with Angela, if you compare her to Thor, which is something we'll probably need to do. She has a lot less control, but she is very good at doing pure damage, and this throw exemplifies that.
Yeah, you could use her as a very expensive Valkyrie if you just wanted to double long move throw something all game, which she moves real far and she throws things that are real big.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty surprising opening play, right? Then her other power, she's got Angelic Assassin. This is a very cool power, unique to her. It's 2-cost reactive power. If this character dazes or KOs an enemy character with an attack during its activation, then you can use the superpower. Angela advances short and then gets to make her Xiphos Sword of Stars strike attack. This superpower can only be used once a turn. So if she is dazing or KOing someone, she's getting an extra move and an extra attack. And this really emphasizes her mobility, right? Her attack is already placing her. She's already moving a long way, and she's got other attacks that are moving her as well. And she could potentially be doing 2 or 3 movements plus 2 or 3 attacks in a single activation.
Yeah, this is the... Obviously, it's incredibly powerful. And if she does spike some dice, she can just go crazy with the amount of damage she's able to put out there, especially since a lot of times you're just attacking with Sword of the Stars, so you're a builder, so you're constantly pulling that power on her. It's an incredibly powerful ability, and it can be really backbreaking if you get it rolling.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things that emphasizes her role, which is she's a fast-moving damage dealer, but it also emphasizes, hey, 6 dice is good, but it's not everything. She really wants to be hunting some of those more fragile targets so that she can reliably get those dazes and KOs and trigger Angelic Assassin. And she's going to have a much better turn if she's hunting down a squishier target than if she is fighting with some big brawler.
Yep, that is very fair. And then just to round out her card, right, she has Asgardian, Flight, and Living Ribbons, Pat. And there's been a lot of talk about Living Ribbons, but what do we know about that?
Yeah, this card was confusing because... This rule, because it's open to interpretation. And, of course, Angela was released into the wild prematurely, and we didn't get that interpretation for quite some time. But Living Ribbons says, enemy characters cannot place the movement tool overlapping this character's base. Enemy characters cannot reroll or change attack dice when targeting this character with attacks. So the confusing part is the first sentence, not being able to place the movement tool, and in particular, overlapping. We've had a clarification on overlapping since she was spoiled in recent weeks on the Atomic Mass Games Rules Forum that has basically explained, look, overlapping is not the same as contacting. They use their English definitions as per the dictionary. And so it is possible for her to contact things with the movement tool. For example, you can throw her or push her by placing the movement tool in contact with her and moving her along the tool. But what this is stopping is it's stopping characters from advancing or climbing over her.
So the part of Living Ribbons that actually I think is really impressive is not being able to reroll or change attack dice when targeting this character with attacks. So we couple that with 6 stamina, 4/4 defense, and not being able to reroll or change dice. She seems extremely durable there.
Very durable, I agree. There's a lot of really powerful attackers in the game that get their power from the option to reroll. And modifying dice is rare, but it comes up. You know, an example would be something like Warrior of Legend or Valkyrie. Doesn't work against Angela. And it gives us some really strong matchups, right, where characters whose power is based on their ability to reroll are just not going to deal with her well. And then she's obviously benefits a lot from defensive team tactics cards and effects. And she's an Asgardian, right? And Asgard has no shortage of those.
Yeah, so all in all, she seems like an incredibly dynamic 5-threat character. I think that she pairs really well with Thor, albeit they come in a little expensive. Mm-hmm. But I really like her, and she's just such a handful to deal with on the table.
Yeah, she really is. I love how mobile she is. I love the opening plays that she can make. So we spoke about this a little bit when I was reading the top of her stat card, right? But the fact that she is a long mover with a 50mm base is incredibly important, because it means she's the first character we have in the game who, in a single move action, can get from deployment to within range 1 of any of the centrally placed objectives. So, for example, the hammers on the sides of the table, the extremist consoles on the side and the D-secures, the middle gamma shelter, the deadly meteors, right? There's so many crises that she can get to in a single action, which means she has a second action then to make a Sword of the Stars attack. She's an Asgardian, so she has enough power to trigger Angelic Assassin or Odin's Daughter's Might, guaranteed. And so she can have some really, really powerful plays turn on turn with just a move, strike, attack, and throw, right? And that is enough damage threat to threaten to daze a character and trigger Angelic Assassin.
I don't remember, Pat, correct me. If she goes to the east on a C map, can she then take the second move and get to the middle one? I thought she could, but I don't honestly remember.
Yeah, she definitely can. So, yeah, on a C map like Deadly Meteors, she can handle 2 meteors. She's fast enough that she can do something like move to take the central cosmic cube, for example, and then move back to take one of your second cosmic cubes. So she's really good on a lot of the extracts where you can carry multiple extracts. She has a huge amount of play on pretty much any crisis because of her uniquely long movement.
Yeah, it's seems very powerful, especially for something like Senators if you wanted to. Yeah, she would suffer the slow speed and the one less defense die, which is huge. But just being able to guarantee, or not guarantee, but getting two of the three cracks at the apple for that could be very powerful. So, she just seems like an incredibly dynamic character. I can't wait to pick her up here in the U.S., I honestly don't really know what to say else to say about her. She's durable. She's a damage dealer. I don't think she replaces Thor. I know a lot of people said that. Thor fills a different kind of role.
Yeah, as we mentioned, Thor has a lot of control, right? Thor can throw characters with his strike and with his superpower. Thor can stagger characters. Thor can shock characters. Put that all together, he actually is one of the most controlling characters in the game. Angela has no control at all, and her damage output is sometimes better than Thor's, but not always. And what she's got instead is she's got more speed. And the speed is really, really helpful, but she's certainly not just a better Thor. They're quite different. The combination of her resilience and her speed makes her really, really good at scoring crises. I think that's where she really shines. But even though she's resilient, she's not invincible. And if you put her in a situation where she's in a lot of danger, she can still go down.
Yeah, we pair her defensive stats, her stamina with Odin's blessing. She's not an easy nut to crack. And the reason I love her the most, Pat, is she is fantastic into MODOK. No problems throwing her at MODOK. She gets that one big throw into him, plus either her builder or Heaven's Wrath. She can definitely spike a lot of damage into the big floating brand.
Yeah, she can't trigger the cleave, right? But she gets to roll 8 dice with Heaven's Wrath, which is really cool. And her main attacks being physical helps. It's also nice that MODOK can't re-roll his attacks against her because of Living Ribbons. So she definitely matches up pretty well, which is really cool. One thing that I want to say about Angela, because you said all the good things, I think it's worth noting that at her core, Angela is impacting the game in 2 ways. One is by being really, really relevant on the crises, which is great, but she has a high price tag for doing that, right? 5 threat is a lot to score points that could be scored by a 2 threat character. So she's only really making value there if she's going way above and beyond what other characters can do on the crises, which, to be fair, she sometimes can, but not always. And then the second thing is she just does damage. And she's a character that is rolling a slightly above average number of dice, but not a lot above, right? Her attacks are 6 dice, 5 dice, and then some number, probably 6 or 7 on average. And she's got no dice manipulation to help her offensively. So she can have really unreliable turns. Like, her best case turn with Angelic Assassin in a throw can be incredible, but she can very easily just make 2 Sword of Stars attacks and whiff and end up with a very lackluster activation for a 5-threat character.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting blend that she brings to the table, right? Like, her damage output when she gets rolling is great. We talked about it. It's a little spiky for me. Like you said, we're really just depending on that 6-dice attack combined with a really good throw. But her ability to just reposition so dynamically, she's almost never out of position just because of how fast she is why mm-hmm. I've always just really enjoyed her on the tabletop. It's just, she's a great blend of, she can brawl it out with people when she needs to. She's resilient. So if she goes out there and grabs or interacts with things, she's hard to get them ripped away from her, and she can get to almost any point to interact with them. And the ability to, I think we're kind of beating a dead horse here, but Xyphos is great, right? If you're able to knock an objective off someone with Xyphos, you can place that objective in weird places. Then we're placing Angela in a weird place too, so she can retreat to safety almost off things without an action. She's just got so much modality, so many options when you're playing with her.
Yeah, and I like that. To that end, she's really good, as we said, at repositioning and chasing characters. I like that you can have weird plays where you ignore the character facing you down in melee and target someone with Blades of Ikkar, range 4 away, hit pursuit, get in range to Xyphos them, teleport to the other side of them with Xyphos, and Angela has moved like 16 inches without actually using a move action, made two attacks against a different character and got herself out of danger. I think her mobility really helps to add to her defenses because she can really choose who she's fighting. And with Living Ribbon, she has some really good matchups in that department.
Yeah, so at the most she could move would be, what, two shorts and a two-inch place in a round?
So, Angelic Assassin gives you a short and a Xyphos. So, if you assume she's not actually using a move action, she could Blades of Ikkar to do a short move, then Xyphos to do a place, trigger Angelic Assassin, do a short move, and then a Xyphos and do another place. And each of the Xyphos places could be about 8 inches. Each of the short moves with her base is another 5. So she is probably going something like, without any move actions, she could absolutely move about 26 inches. Which is absurd, right? Now, obviously, that's the best case scenario, but it emphasizes her mobility.
Yeah, and that's all we really want to do here is just emphasize that she is a extremely mobile, durable character, and I think we've done that. Is there anything else you want to talk about Angela before we jump down to Enchantress?
I think we've covered it. She's really, really cool. I look forward to discussing her more in the after-credit scene. We'll talk a bit about how she and Enchantress impact the affiliations that they're joining. But yeah, let's talk about Enchantress, because although we both really like Angela, I think I like Enchantress a bit more.
See, I think I like Enchantress more. You said we were going to start with Angela for alphabetical and power level, and I was confused, because I think Enchantress is a house.
Yeah, me too. She's, hot take, I think she's the best 4-threat character in the game. That's what I think about Enchantress.
Better than Black Dwarf?
Certainly better than Black Dwarf.
I mean, let's take a tangent here real quick. Who are the 4-threat characters that we're theoretically
who are competing? Okay, I'll throw out some 4-threat characters who are real good. Kingpin. Wolverine,
yep, he's top of my list.
Black Panther, Vision, and of course, your favorite, Captain America.
I can't believe you even named Captain America. I can't believe you would name Captain America before Red Skull. That's crazy to me.
Well, yeah. I mean, Captain America's my gag mention. But the other four are legitimately up there as some of the best 4-threats, right? And I think Enchantress has them beat.
So are we not considering Corvus Glaive a 4-threat?
No, not one of the best 4-threats in any case.
Okay, we think he comes into his own at the 5?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think she's up there. I think we're kind of in a hair-splitting category because she doesn't... Let's talk about her card, but she doesn't play the same way that any of those characters do, right? Black Panther is an interesting scenario piece. Enchantress is another one. Kingpin is just this gnarly beater. I agree that she's really powerful. Might be the best 4 out there. You know, maybe Pat and I will re-rank our characters again. We did that, 6 or 9 months ago. There's a lot more characters to go. But Enchantress at the top of her card, 4 threat, 6 stamina, medium mover, size 2, wonderful defensive suite of 2, 2, and 5. What about her attacks, Pat?
Yeah, so her first attack is Spurned Affection. It's an energy attack, beam 3, always nice to have a beam, 5 dice. It gives 1 power after it's used, and it has wild sap power, which is common enough now that I'm not going to repeat the rules for sap power. This is basically Vision's beam, but shorter range, right? Exact same thing, but his is beam 4. And then her spender is Enthrall. It's a mystic attack. It's always nice to have more mystic attacks. It's range 3, 7 dice, 3 cost. And it has a really fun wild effect, where if you get 1 wild, then you slow the target. If you get 2, you stun them. And if you get 3, you stagger them. And remember, wilds aren't exclusive. So if you get 3, you slow, stun, and stagger, which is pretty cool if it comes up.
Yeah, it seems a little excessive.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be real sad.
So an interesting attack suite. Obviously, Spurned Affection is great. I mean, Vision's Solar Energy Beam is phenomenal. This is shorter range, but still just a really good attack. We couple Sat Power with a Static Builder on top of Asgardian. She has the potential to gain a lot of power off a single attack. For anyone that doesn't know, every attack within the beam is going to generate her that one power. So definitely a high potential for power gain off that builder, right? What do we think about Enthrall as a spender?
I think it is a fine spender, but nothing to write home about. It's always nice to have more mystic attacks. And Asgard in general has quite a lot of 6-7 dice mystic spenders, and it gives you a nice bit of flexibility. But I think this is one of those effects that you're using when Enchantress has an excess of power. Spurned Affection has the same range and is so good at giving you power because of the Sat Power effect plus the guaranteed one multiplied by the number of people you're hitting, that whenever you need power, you're going to be using it. And Enthrall is your option when, like, Enchantress is just full of power and you just need to be dealing with an opposing character. You'll switch to Enthrall. I don't think she'll be using it every turn by any means, because she has such amazing ways to spend her power outside of her attacks.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I've only ever used this when she's been coming out of a daze with a ton of power on her. Yeah. Almost every other time I'm able to just dump power out through her superpowers. And we might as well start going through them. Pat, where do you want to start?
This is quite the superpower suite. Her first is Amora's Kiss. This is a really unique, really powerful effect. It's one of the things that defines her. It's a 3-cost active power. Choose an enemy character within range 1 of her, and you get to move an extract token from the chosen character to Enchantress. You can only hold as many as it specifies. You can only move one token with this. But just being able to steal an extract from an opposing character without having to roll any dice is really, really strong. And if you've got enough power, you could steal multiple extracts from somebody.
Yeah, obviously really powerful. Some of the questions I see pop up in Discord and things like that is, mission objective does not help you here. Mission objective says when you're dropping it, and Amora's Kiss just says you're moving it. It's an incredibly powerful swing. We talked about Hired Muscle a while ago. She definitely kind of tunes that list up a lot. We've talked about how much we love Miles with Venom Blast. While she has a harder time getting within one of people than Miles does getting within two, she has a much easier time with the power generation. And she's reasonably tanky as well, which I guess we should get into now.
Yeah, before we do, there's one thing I want to mention on that comparison. Bear in mind, her Amora's Kiss is not an action, right? So Miles is spending an attack action to steal an objective, and she isn't. So actually, it's pretty... In most cases, it's going to be easier for her to get into range than it would be for Miles, because she can double move and do it. And the option to steal objectives from people and then double move away is also going to be really frustrating for a lot of opponents.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess what Venom Blast costs 3, and then Webline also costs... Is Webline 2 or 3? I've played too many Avenger games.
Webline is 2, yeah. Venom Blast is 3. Webline's so Venom 2. Blast so is costing the same as the Amora's Kiss.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely get what you're saying. Not a direct apples-to-apples comparison. There's some finagling that has to happen in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, things that don't cost actions are really good, right? And that's Amora's Kiss. Her next power, Hell Hath No Fury, is a modest throw. It is a throw that throws size 2 terrain only, doesn't throw characters, from within range 3, and it throws it medium, and it costs 3 power. So it has good range in terms of where you can pick up the terrain and how far it can go, but it's only size 2. This is a useful effect to do some extra damage in a pinch. And then...
Oh, I do also... Sorry, before we get too far. My bad. Venom Blast also makes you drop the objective tokens, which is also important, right? I think one of the things we kind of... Pat mentioned there for sure, but Amora's Kiss moving it to you is obviously very different than the dropping mechanic. So I guess, yeah, to Venom Blast and pick it up, you're talking about 4 power in a vacuum, and then we're talking about 2 for the web snare. So definitely a lot more power for Miles to do it. So anyway, sorry. Didn't mean to steal Enchantress's thunder. What power is next?
Her next power is Siren's Call. Choose an enemy character within range 3 and advance it short. This is a 2-cost active power. A character can be made to advance by a superpower only once per turn. It's exactly the same as Bout's Will of MODOK. It's an incredibly powerful controlling effect.
Yeah, this superpower broke my heart. I was not happy to see this reprinted. And this is the reason that I haven't used Enthrall a whole lot, because normally I'm just like, well, I'm just going to beam these people. Or maybe if you want to be real cheeky, you Siren's Call people into an even better beam. And then you just, yeah, I don't know. It's real good. It's a fantastic way to dump power.
It's an absurdly powerful effect on a character that has no problem generating enough power to use it multiple times in every round, in my experience. And it's one of the things that defines her as being an incredibly powerful character turn on turn, at least in my opinion.
To be clear, she can't use the superpower on the same target, but she can use it as many individual targets as she wants. It's also a great way to get someone in range for the Amora's Kiss. It costs a lot of power, but I mean, really, we're talking about five. You move someone closer to you, you steal something, and then you run away twice. It's just, it's really good.
And it's another effect that doesn't cost an action. But I mean, making your opponent move is oftentimes costing them an action, and that action economy can add up very quickly, especially when she's able to use it so frequently. Mm. Okay, so to round it off, she's an Asgardian, so she generates two power a round, which is great, especially with her incredibly good superpowers. She has flight, which is never bad, and she has enchanting, which is her defensive ability. This is an innate power, and what it does is very unique. She always gets to use her mystic defense when she is being attacked, unless the attacking character pays two power. Why might you want to pay two power? Well, just to remind you, her physical and energy defenses are two. So if I am rocking Baron Zemo with a physical sword strike, I can do five dice against her mystic defense, or I can pay two power and do five dice against two instead. So this is a really, really interesting defensive ability and very unique. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I like it. It's really strong, in my opinion. I think it has good, like, tax synergy if you want to run, like, a Loki line as well, where Loki's taxing their superpowers and Enchantress is even harder to attack. You can be a bit bolder with her in the opening moves or opening turns where your opponent doesn't have as much power, so you know that they're coming into that five defense. I think it's really good. I like Enchanting a lot.
Yeah, me too. And I think you covered all the main points. Much better earlier in the game. Really good with taxing. I think it's worth pointing out that Enchantress, just on her own merits, is an incredibly good tax character because she's got sap power on her builder. She's got enchanting, which forces people to spend power if they want to damage her. And she is putting out lots of kisses and calls to take objectives and move characters without damaging them. So she is not giving people a lot of power to retaliate against her with.
Yeah, and we said it with Angela, but we'll say it again. We couple that with Odin's Blessing, and it's a really, really durable piece, right? You're able to absorb that one giant dice spike and kind of keep on going. Do you want to take a moment and talk about the Enchantering interaction with Bodyguard? Because I've seen a few people mess this one up.
Yeah, I do, because it's really important, because it's very powerful. So the key point here is Enchanting is a really unique effect. We don't have very many effects like this in the game right now, and the timing of it is interesting. So this is a defensive ability that triggers when the attacker targets you, right? Because the attacker has to make the decision about whether or not they're going to pay the power. From the timing chart for the attack sequence, the attacker's effects happen before the defender's effects. So if Enchantress is standing next to our good friend Captain America, and he's got enough power to bodyguard her, and I'm a
character in the game.
Yeah, and we go back to the example of Baron Zemo striking her down with a strike, right? If Baron Zemo makes his strike attack and decides he is going to pay the two power to reduce her defense to two, he makes that decision before Captain America decides to bodyguard. So Captain America can then say, okay, you've paid two power, I am now going to bodyguard the attack, and you hit Captain America instead. You've still paid that two power, but it's functionally wasted because you're not attacking Enchantress.
Yeah, so we've seen a few people mess it up. I think it's a great time to point it out. And it functions similar to Death's Decree off of Thanos, which is that other, you know, anything that happens on the attack targeting. So just keep that in mind. Enchantress pairs really well with a bodyguard if you can get one out there.
Yeah, or indeed with something like Lifesaver or Team Tactics cards that have similar effects. We're all really, really good with her.
No, all great points. So yeah, Enchantress is just phenomenal, right? Just a super solid scenario piece. She really just, like, doubles down on what she does, and she does it really well.
Really, really well. She's very hard to deal with because her superpowers have very little counterplay, right? Because they don't. She doesn't cost actions. There's almost no way in the game to stop being moved by Siren's Call. I can't really think of any. There's no way to protect yourself from Amora's Kiss, short of something like the Shh Tactics card. And she is generating enough power that she is easily going to be able to do these things. And I think it's really common, for example, an opening play with her could be to double move onto an objective and just Siren's Call the opposing character away, right? And so she's really good at getting you ahead on victory points. But later in the game, my experience with her has been that it's not uncommon for her to do things like beam a couple of characters to generate enough power where she then moves both those characters away. She moves to a different part of the table and then moves more characters away, possibly also stealing objectives in the process. And her effect on the game can just be very, very large indeed when she is in those situations where she can get lots of targets within her range of three.
Yeah, I think she's a character you have to jump on in the mid game. I think in the early game, getting a few points of chip damage on her might not honestly be worth it, just because like the attack defending math isn't great if you're going into that five Mystic. But once you have that two power to make a few big swings, you have to try to swing her down, make her use Odin's Blessing. You can't afford to let her just linger, because she changes. She's so dynamic in what she can do. Just we talked about with the bows. She's really mobile, really bouncy. Not really mobile, but she's not like Angela mobile. But she moves around the board well. We couple that with the Siren's Calls, and it's really hard to factor in late game. So I've always tried as hard as I can to focus her down mid game. I guess you can root her, which slows her down a little bit.
Yes.
Honestly, stun doesn't even do that much because she has so many individual ways to gain power.
Yeah, it does nothing really against her beam, right? Because Spurned Affection is going to give her one for every target. Set Power will give her one for every target where you get at least one wild. So it's not really stopping her, like you said.
Yeah, and that's why I just wanted to call that out, because a lot of people are like, oh, she needs power, I'm just going to stun her. It doesn't really work. Poison is honestly it's kind of like a drop in the bucket in my experience. It negates Asgardian, and she's like, beam, gain three power. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay, that's fair. So she can definitely be a handful to use. If you can get a root on her, that's phenomenal. But if you're taking her in the Asgard affiliation, she just spends the power to get rid of the root.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of ways to deal with her. Like you said, I think jumping on her and just trying to smash out damage when you can is really effective, especially if you've got characters with good power generations, they can afford to pay through enchanting. Mm-hmm. And when you can catch her out and hit her with a big attack and she's only got two defense, she will crumple pretty easily. She's only got five stamina on her injured side, so 11 total is not that high. And the other thing that she's obviously very vulnerable to is enchanting does not work against throws, and she only has two physical defense. So throwing stuff at her is a good way to deal with her.
Yeah, I've also had pretty good luck with Shuri, honestly, just pushing her backwards. Mm-hmm. All of the relevant things we're talking about in Enchantress are range 3 or shorter, right? Her throw is medium, which is close to range 3. We can get into that later, right? Siren's Call is range 3. Her beam is range 3. And then
it's all range 3, yeah. 1.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So if you can push her back or control her with Shuri or other pushes, you can mitigate her impact on the field. And then Shuri's great, because if you get a couple points of chip damage in the early game, if she's down to 4 stamina, she's a lot easier to burst down with that single attack. So Shuri's definitely another one to consider if Enchantress is giving you fits.
Cool, that's a good one. I hadn't really thought about that interaction, but it sounds nice. So yeah, overall, we're pretty high on Enchantress, right? She's real good.
It is impressive that Angela is not the character I'm most excited with in this box, is what I will say.
Yeah, this has to be one of the most impactful boxes, I think, that we've had. If you think back about the releases in our first year of MCP, there's a couple of boxes that stand out as having really powerful characters that see a lot of table time. So, for example, Miles and Gwen, or Shuri and Okoye. And Toad and Magneto, why not? And for me, Enchantress and Angela is right up there. These are two characters that are incredible in their affiliations, and you would strongly consider including in any affiliation because of what they bring.
And we're going to talk about in the after the credit scene. If you're interested in that, you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. That's the last time we'll mention the Patreon, sorry. So they do have a bunch of cards that come along in the box as well. I think the first one we want to start with is Grievous Wounds.
Yeah, why not? So Grievous Wounds is an unaffiliated card. So we might see it quite often. It's cheap. It only costs one power. and it's a reactive card. During a character's activation, they can pay it when they target an enemy character with an attack. And then if the attack deals damage, the target character can't have damage removed during the round. So it is a way to stop a character from healing or otherwise stopping damage. I want to call out, because we've already talked about Odin's Blessing and the similar card, Exceptional Healing. It stops damage from being removed, but it doesn't stop damage from being prevented. So Grievous Wounds won't stop Odin's Blessing. It won't stop Exceptional Healing. But it would, for example, stop Medpack or the Asgardian Leadership from working.
And it stops half a field dressing.
Yes. So you can... Yeah, that's pretty interesting. So, overall, I think this card is pretty helpful, but it's one of those cards that it reminds me of something like Mark for Death. It's a cheap way to counter a very specific set of abilities that is helpful to have in the game, but I don't think you necessarily want to be taking it for every matchup. If you'd asked me a few months ago, you know, before the banned and restricted list, when Medpack and Patch Up were more ubiquitous, I'd have considered taking Grievous Wounds more often. But I think these days there's a little bit less healing around, and I think it's more one of those picks you might take if you're really struggling to deal with particular characters like Venom or Wolverine, for example.
Yeah, it's interesting, which is what a couple months of the meta will do. I was more excited with this when it was initially sold accidentally than I am now. I still think it's a good card. I think it's a great card that they printed. I think it's a good unaffiliated card to have in your toolbox in case something comes down the pipe. I don't see myself taking it in a lot of my eights right now.
No. It's nice to have, but yeah, it won't come up that often. It'll be cool when it does. I wanted to call out, the way that this effect is applied is a little bit awkward, because you use it before you resolve your attack, and it only works if you deal damage. So it can have some really bad moments where you've used your card and it does nothing because your attack whiffs, which can happen all the time in Marvel Crisis Protocol. So that is a bit of a shame. And it works really badly, once again, against Bodyguard, where you declare you're using this attack and then your opponent can Bodyguard against it and it won't do anything. So you need to pick your moments with this card and make sure you're using it on an attack that is likely to do damage and is unlikely to be stopped in any way.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Trip Up, honestly, where Trip Up is an incredibly powerful card, right? But like when it whiffs, and then it just feels bad.
Yeah, agreed. So that's Grievous Wounds.
Pat, I'm going to interrupt you real quick. Did they errata Grievous Wounds or not yet?
Not yet, so that's why I didn't mention it.
Go ahead, keep going.
So the next card is Rainbow Bridge, our second Asgard-affiliated card, as if Odin's Blessing wasn't enough. We now have a second awesome card, which is associated with this very own podcast, the Rainbow Bridge, of course, being the Bifrost. This is an active card. Any number of allied Asgard characters can spend 3 power each to play it, and every character that does is placed within range 3 of their current location. So this is like an upgraded Avengers Assemble, right? Avengers Assemble, you pay 1 power, you move short. This one, you pay 3 power, you're placed 3. And a 3-inch place is a really long way. 3 power is a high cost, but Asgardians tend to have a lot of power to use. TT, what do you think about this card?
I think it's amazing. I think it's real, real, real good. And the reason I like it the most is there is no restriction to whether or not you are holding scenario elements.
Yeah, that is a very powerful effect on such a long move, right?
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I think it's incredibly powerful. We talked about how bouncy Angela was already. We talked about how Enchantress can end up with a glut of power. This is just, just a phenomenal card. You know, one of the controlling messages with Thor has been to push him back, right? And then obviously this gets around that. It's not hard for you to run an Asgard heavy team, right? No one's going to be upset about something like Enchantress, Valkyrie, Thor, Angela for like a 17. Yeah, that's a 17.
That's a real good 17.
And with Rainbow Bridge, it's just so much... they're able to refocus really quickly. I think it's a really powerful card.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those cards, it's expensive, but the cost is worth paying. And it's one of those cards where I would happily take this card if I only move one character, right? I love climbing gear. Climbing gear costs me 3 and lets me move a character short. This costs 3 and lets me move any number of characters range 3. So it's like double the distance, and then I can potentially move multiple people. So I'm happy playing this card on a single target. And if you can move multiple Asgardians, it's a huge amount of value.
Yeah, it's a really powerful card. I don't know another way to say it. It's it's one of those cards that's really hard to plan around. You have this plus Odin's Blessing. It just makes for some... Yeah, it can just kind of give your opponent fits if they kind of run through all the possibilities.
Yeah.
Really good, welcome addition to Asgard, who was already an incredibly strong affiliation. Yeah, really powerful card.
Yeah, I like that because the Asgardians in general are very tough, you can get a lot of situations where you have characters who are in some amount of danger, and Thor and Angela are great examples of tough characters who get themselves in a lot of danger really easily because they're so aggressive. Rainbow Bridge is a great way of getting them out of danger, as well as potentially a way to get them into it in the first place, right? It's really nice that they can very easily survive a single character attacking them, especially with Odin's Blessing. And then you can play Rainbow Bridge when they've taken a bit of damage and got some power to help them escape. And as you said, TT, you can hold objectives with this card, so you can definitely use it as an escape mechanism to secure those valuable victory points.
Yeah, incredibly powerful. So... the last card in the box is an interesting one. It's Lovable Misfits, which is kind of us, right, Pat? So it's a Guardians of the Galaxy active card. Any number of allied Guardians of the Galaxy characters may spend one each to play this card. Oh, my God. Why did I read this one? There's so much text. Each character that played this card may roll one die. If they roll a crit or a wild, they may immediately either make an attack with a power cost of zero or gain two power. If they roll a hit, enemy characters within three of this character holding or contesting an objection token suffer 1 point of damage. If they roll a shield or a blank, they may immediately advance short. If they roll a skull, the character and all other characters with two gain the stun special edition. Complete each character's roll in order before moving to the next. Oh my God, I can't believe I read that. I'm never reading another tactics card, Pat.
So look, I'm going to level with you. I spoke extra about Rainbow Bridge because I thought it increased my chance of you reading this card, and I'm glad that I did.
God, I was played.
This card is wacky. It's fun, and it's super hard to take in and to quantify because it gives you all kinds of different effects all across the table, and you don't know what you're getting where. Sometimes you're getting power, sometimes you're getting moves, sometimes you're getting attacks, sometimes you're stunning yourself or your opponent. Like, something is happening on every character. My experience of play with this card is if you have a lot of Guardians on your team, overall the effect is worth it, but it's super unpredictable what the effect is going to be. And what I have found is I want to be playing this card when I have most of my team in close contact with the enemy, right? When you have models like Drax, Groot and Gamora within range 2. When you have lots of people within range 2, you can reliably expect that the stun effect and the effect that gives you an attack are actually going to pay off. And at that point, basically no effect is bad. If you use the card too situationally, it can really suck, right? Where if you look down and you think, well, this character's not in range to make any attacks, and they're standing on an objective, so I don't really want them to move, then like a lot of your results on the roll are just not going to pay off for you. So I think you basically kind of have to hedge your bets. You know the effect's going to be random, but you want to create a situation where as many results as possible are going to be effective in some way.
Yeah, it's a bizarre card, and I mean, I'll stay on brand. Like, you can always pitch it from winging it tokens. I think what you said is wise, though. If you have two would be the minimum. I mean, if you need to use it for one, you have to use it for one. But I would try for two or three characters that could make use out of it, regardless of the die roll that comes up. I think the one that gets used the least often is, right, enemy characters holding or contesting objectives suffer one. Right, the advance is always going to be relevant. You can control... We talked about with the range 2 for the stun. There's a lot of characters that need to be within range 2 to make an attack. But it's a great card. It's a wacky on-brand card. It's a pain to resolve, but I like it.
It's really fun.
Wakanda forever.
Yeah. I mean, it can. Definitely can. I think it's
it could
fun.
Be Avengers Assemble. Like, who knows? There's so many things.
Yeah, it's funny because its best case is so high, right? Like, when the stars align and each of your characters does exactly the thing you need them to do, it's going to be the best card in the game. But then it can very easily be a case of, oh, Drax wants to attack, but he's out of range. Oh, Rocket has just stung Groot. Oh, you know what I mean? And you could end up just paying power to do basically nothing. So yeah, definitely it's on brand for them. I think this card is really fun. I think Guardians of the Galaxy are solidified for me right now as the fun affiliation, where there are lots of cool characters who may not be the most competitive, but they can definitely win games, and they all are really cool and flavorful, and this card fits right into that.
It's a it's a great card, and if you play it, more power to you. I think it's a wonderful card. So I think that wraps up our Angela and Enchantress box review. I don't know what the word is. Highly anticipated characters to use in the TTS leagues and on your tabletops whenever you're available to play in person. A really powerful card in Rainbow Bridge, an adorable card in Lovable Misfits, and a decent toolbox card in Grievous Wound. So overall, it's a great box. I recommend purchasing it if you were interested in anything in here. Stay tuned for the After the Credit Scenes patrons. For everyone else, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for a fantastic podcasting year in 2020. I realize the rest of 2020 might not have been fantastic. We do want to thank you all for your continued support on the podcast. Till next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere across the bifrost, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.